145 episodes, but they haven't all been Patriotic Weekly Review. That's a bit of a disastrous start, isn't it? Already fallen at the first hurdle. So, it is a good week to be here. We've just come off the back of an excellent, excellent second Patriotic Conference, which we will, of course, be discussing with the lads from the Absolute State of Britain shortly. But before we get into that, let's tell you how you can contribute to the show. If you want to make a contribution to the show, please use Entropy, which is the free speech alternative to Super Chat. You can get the Entropy link from my Twitter, from my Telegram. It is there now. It's also in the description of the show, and it's in the live chat. I've just posted it. You can make donations via Entropy, and you can also ask questions. The best questions are voted up. All donations are read out, and the best questions are read out every week and put to the panel. That is very important. Secondly, these shows always disappear from YouTube, and they always disappear 12 hours after the end of the broadcast. But a full archive of all episodes of Patriotic Weekly Review and all of my previous videos in uncensored forms are up on BitChute. So if you want to support the archive, if you want to watch old episodes, and also if you want to support me, please go over to BitChute, create an account over there, and subscribe to my channel. Because if anything happens to this channel here on YouTube, BitChute will be the only place you'll be able to find me. So please go and support me over there. That would be super, super helpful. Now, if you haven't shared this show, please like, please share, please help get the word out that we are live. It would be good to have good numbers, especially after what we achieved at the weekend, which we'll be discussing very, very shortly. Now, I don't really think I have anything extra. Oh, no, I have one thing to say. And don't forget, we're not just live here on YouTube. We are also live over on Radio Albion at the same time. Now, Radio Albion is run by Sven Longshanks. He produces excellent content over there on a daily basis. And all of the speeches from the conference, from all six speakers, can be found over on Radio Albion now, audio only. So that's a great place to go if you haven't listened to the speeches. My speech will also be here on my YouTube channel, and that will be uploaded on Friday instead of my usual video. So if you want to watch me make a speech, please go to my channel on Friday. But if you just want to listen, you can listen now over at radioalbion.com. Please support Radio Albion because, as I say, they do excellent work and they do allow us to stream there at the same time as we stream to YouTube. And having our own streaming platform will become more and more important in the future. So that leaves me with nothing else will become more and more important in the future. So that leaves me with nothing else to say for the intro. So I'm going to pass it over to my good friend, Jason No White Guilt, who is just back from Corona infected Britain, where he came as a guest speaker to the. I hope you're in good spirits. I hope you're not too jet lagged still. And I also hope you enjoyed your weekend with us. It was a great, great honor to have you over here. And please tell us a little bit about your thoughts about all that. And of course, tell us if there's going to be an after party this weekend and who's on tap.
Well, of course, we're going to have an after party. We're tapping to someone. I just don't know who yet or what day. We'll figure out the details and we'll make sure everybody knows exactly what day and time and person or people that we have on. I'm excited to be here with the Absolute State of Britain today. I'm sure this is going to be a magnificent conversation. And yes, I'm back from the corona-infected islands, the Green Isles over there. But Northern Virginia, where I am, is now becoming increasingly infected as well. Every day, it's quadrupling, I think, or something of this nature. Big surprise, since this is where all of the sewers of the world dump straight into the United States. No way anybody could have predicted that. No way. But I don't know if you want me to say anything about the conference now, or you want to move into that after we get an intro from everybody first. What would you like to do, Mark?
Well, we'll go around the group then. We'll introduce these guys, and then we will all discuss the conference when they've been introduced. How's that?
Sounds good.
Okay. And just to reiterate, if you want to contribute to the show, please use Entropy. The link's in the chat. And if you can't use Entropy, the other way to contribute to our work is via Bitcoin. And the link to my Bitcoin account is in the show description. So they're the ways you can support us financially. Now, to introduce the absolute state of Britain. Now, these guys are absolutely phenomenal guys. I've already been on their show, which is over on TRS, and they have been supporting Patriotic Alternative from, really, I think it was the second camp and, of course, the first meeting that we held last September. So these people are not only fantastic content producers, but they are also good friends of mine and have been so supportive of what we're trying to build as a real world community. So I'm going to let them introduce themselves because it's been a long time since we've had so many guests on the show all at one time. So if you guys can go round the group, introduce yourselves, say a little bit about yourselves, and also tell us how we can support the Absolute State of Britain, which is a fantastic show.
Yeah, it's great to be on the show, Mark. It's been a long time coming. Obviously, we had you on, I think it was shortly after the first Patriotic Alternative Conference.
Yeah.
So it was quite a long time ago now. So you're overdue to return once again. And of course, we'll look forward to that. As you say, if you want to support us, just have a listen on you can find us on Spreaker or therightstuff.biz. That's where you'll find our show, The Absolute State of Britain. And, you know, we're not really asking for any money. If you want to give any money, obviously give that to Patriotic Alternative. We'd much rather that it goes towards a good cause. And, I mean, we only probably met you, you know, sometime last year for the first time. And, you know, we've become really, really good friends since then. We've made a lot of friends through this thing, through the meetups, even the first meetup before the official conference. You know, we met people there who are friends to this day, who we work with all the time. So that's great. I'll let Nativist speak next.
Yeah, great to be here. As I said on Tesla before, I first became of Mark when I was watching a Russell Brand documentary about 10 years ago or something. And I was just an uninitiated idiot liberal at that time. So it was absolutely surreal to meet up with Mark for the first time last summer, where we ended up in a Leeds wine bar with about 20 of our number, where that's really where we started getting going with these meetups. And just a great event, and I'm on such a hype after Saturday. The conference was brilliant, and there's something really special happening. So great to be here, and hello to everyone in the chat as well.
Before we go on to the final member of TASOP, I've just got to say, I don't like to pick favourites, but if I had to pick a favourite, it probably would be Nativist Concern, because I have never, ever in my life seen a man eat so much food that I've cooked. I think he consumed a minimum of 5 entire hot dogs to himself at the second camp we held. So I think he deserves special recognition for undergoing such a masculine task as that. He just kept coming back for more, like a hot dog eating machine.
Yeah, when I've met fans of the show, they thought I was absolutely massive after your story, Mark, and probably some things I've said on the show. And they're a bit surprised to see me at 6 foot and 12 stone or whatever I am.
Yeah, here I was, Mark, thinking it was going to be me for my repertoire of impressions, although unfortunately one of them's you, so maybe that starts to grate a bit after a while. But I don't know, yeah. Yeah, I came to the podcast a little bit later. We've been going almost a year now, but I joined in early July, and I'm probably the clown of it, if anything. I mean, we've got to be on our best behaviour tonight, because we're pretty, you know, we sort of shoot from the hip. We've been told a lot recently that it's basically like three blokes talking in a pub, usually with a guest. Now we've had some pretty good guests on lately, and we've got some good ones coming up. And I think, you know, if you talk like the way we do in a pub, you'd probably be looking over your shoulder a lot, to be honest. You know, so we got to be on our best behavior tonight, which we will. You know, we can polish it up a bit, but it gets pretty spicy. So, you know, if you like to hear people of our understanding shoot from the hip, then yeah, you probably enjoy The Absolute State of Britain.
It is a great show, and I do love you all. I was only joking, but obviously the man who bought his own barbecue and sat and cooked his vegetarian food. That was a bit of a slip, wasn't it? Cooked his vegetarian food while refusing to touch a single one of the gourmet hot dogs I was preparing was never going to be top of the list, mate. Never. But the impressions are fantastic. And I must say, you were Your Alan Partridge impressions are literally top of the tree. I think when we got lost on the walk and we were sort of wandering through some random farmer's field, you certainly lifted everyone's spirit with your almost entire rendition of a whole Alan Partridge episode. That was truly epic.
Cashback.
you definitely add a lot. Well, all of you do. And I really do like going on your show. I think your work's incredible. And I've got to say, having the right people on a show and having that chemistry is what makes it work. And you guys certainly have that. So is there anything else you guys would like to say or anything else you guys would like to plug before we start discussing a few of the big issues, which are obviously going to be the conference and this coronavirus?
No, I think we've said our piece, to be honest. So we're happy to talk about the conference itself. It's it was a lot of fun.
It was, and that's what we're going to go on to next. And I'm going to say very little, actually, because I think we did a great stream last night on Chris's stream, Patriotic Talks. That was a fantastic stream. There were so many people on, and I've seen other people's videos. I must say, I really was touched by Barclay Walsh's video on the conference. That was fantastic. He's only 15. He came along. He was really, really great there. He looked dead smart. Came in a suit, shirt and tie and everything, and everyone loved him. And it was great to see people there. We had the youngest guy there was Barclay, who was just 15. The oldest guy was 90. What an age range. People from all over, all different ages, all coming together to build one incredible, positive community. There was no cliques, no factions, no one left out, just real open, friendly interactions from hundreds of people. And before I do pass it around, I just want to say one thing. I was so nervous the morning before. Jason will say at breakfast, everyone was saying, oh, you know, it's going to be great. And I was nervous because I was worried that because of the coronavirus, we'd have had a real dip in numbers. And to get almost 200 people at a nationalist conference of that quality in such a beautiful venue at a time when people are naturally and understandably scared, it was such a morale booster. But to be sharing this show with you guys is a real honor tonight, because when we had that meeting in Leeds at that lovely wine bar, you guys were there. When we had that camp, you guys were there. And it's such a wonderful journey moving forward with people when you've shared it with them from the very beginning. So look, guys, if you guys can go around the group, and we'll end with Jason, and give us your perspective on the weekend, give us the highs, give us any lows, if there were any, and tell us what you're looking forward to in the future.
Do you want to go? All right, Tola.
I'll step in. Yeah. Okay. Sorry. Yeah, go on. Right. Yeah. They're always real sort of endorphin overloads, these things. Obviously, we talked about it on Chris's stream last night. And there you are, that's my phone on. The narcissist trying to keep in touch with the YouTube chat. So better behave myself. Right. Yeah. No, it was it was an amazing event. I mean, the first conference was great. And I was talking about this on Chris's stream last night. But obviously, you turn up at the next one and it's twice the size. And yet still, you know, I knew probably more than half the people there, and, you know, a lot of those people are friends. So, no, it was an amazing thing. You know, you took a point off me as well, Mark. So that's one less thing I've got to say about the age range. And, you know, the amount of young people there, really well turned out and really sort of switched on, was a massively positive thing. You know, the other thing as well was just how many people listened to us. That really struck me. You know, there was a fair bit of that at the first conference in September, but there was, like, proportionately, even though there was way more of it, at the weekend, which was obviously, you know, really flattering. The other obvious thing that I think people would be aware of without even being there is really the convergence of people from the Count the Jihad holding pen, if you like, into our cause, into the actual, you know, the nationalist cause itself. But it was absolutely brilliant. I mean, the speeches were outstanding. Woes was just absolutely brilliant. I think, you know, Laura's speech in terms of actually setting out solutions and policies was a bit of a landmark, I think. And then obviously I thought Jason had his work cut out trying to top that to finish. But I mean, I talked about this a bit at the weekend with him. I was moved to tears by the end of it. And I felt a bit better about that when I saw that Laura's boyfriend, now fiance, who is the nicest bloke in the world. But there's a, you know, he's a big lad. He's a big solid lad. He was moved to tears as well. So I felt, you know, a little bit less emasculated by my own response. But yeah, it was great.
I'm not sure if you're allowed to announce that. Have they publicly announced it yet?
No, Laura has. Yeah. It was on her little, yeah.
Yeah, congratulations to Laura. And it just underlines that something special is really going on here. I couldn't keep the smile off my face. Seeing old faces and spoke to so many new people. Many of them were listeners to the show. And many of them weren't and wanted to find out more about it. And yes, just such a good vibe going on. Echoing Toller's point, it was great to see the likes of the lads I've seen before at the Tommy Robinson protest. So it was great to see James, Chris, and other people they brought along from that scene as well. And finally, everyone's getting behind the 14 words and real nationalism. And despite everything that went on and all the fears around Corona, people were desperate to pick up those last three tickets after people had to pull out. I mean, I had no doubt there would be a full event, even with the crisis, because for months before, people were telling me, how do you even get a ticket to this thing? It's so exclusive. So I think if you wanted to, you could push it way into the hundreds. Because, you know, no one has a bad time. It really is the best weekend you'll have of the year.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, and I'll echo that point as well. Congratulations to Laura and her boyfriend. You know, they're going to be really happy together, I'm sure. And you know, there's a lot of people who've made friends through PA, and you know, there are a few couples like that which have formed as well, which is great. You know, they're going forwards, and you know, we'll see some children in future, which is what we want. Get that birth rate up. But yeah, there were a lot of people there from, as you say, formerly sort of Tommy camp, who've moved over slowly. I mean, there was quite a pivotal change, actually, I think, after that mini documentary they put out against you, Mark. And I think that really backfired spectacularly. And I just want to say, I think it was they attacked Shazia for talking to you, and it was actually me that got you to talk to each other in the first place. So I kind of feel partly responsible for engineering that and helping to bring some of those people over. Of course, one of the speakers, Dion, was herself formerly in that sort of Tommy camp. She's come over within the last year, and we saw her at the first conference as well. We actually happened to be staying right next to where she was as well, purely by chance. So we had a great chat with her. And at this conference that we've been to recently, there were just so many people there, I didn't get to talk to everyone. And it's a real shame. I wish it could have been like a couple of days or something. That would have been really good to really go around and say hello to all those people we didn't know. And it's really encouraging that, because at the first conference, there were a lot of people who I knew already. And this conference, there was all those people I already knew, but there was all these new faces as well. And people who perhaps I wasn't friends with them or acquaintances with them, but I was aware of them from online. It was really good to see them there. Chris, of course, himself, who does Patriotic Talk. It was good to see James Goddard there, and Shazia Hobbs, amongst others. And all the speeches were excellent. They were all very different. So I couldn't really pick a particular favourite. Of course, Dion's was very heavy. Woe's was very personal. Jason's was very upbeat and inspiring. And, you know, they're all good in their own ways. So, yeah, really excellent time. And I can't wait for the next one. And I hope we'll be past this, you know, disruption that we're facing because of the coronavirus. And, you know, we did actually have a fair number of dropouts towards the end there, but almost all those spaces were filled as well. And I know I actually messaged a friend of mine the day before, and I said to her, look, there's a ticket if you can come. And she's like, yes, I'm driving down there. I'll see you there. And she really enjoyed herself too. So really happy about that.
Jason, my friend, what are your thoughts? And did you enjoy Britain? I must say, picking you up from the airport, you had your goggles and mask on. You came protected. You came, you saw, you conquered. I think the end of your speech when everyone rose to their feet, that was a really triumphant ending to a wonderful day. So thank you so much for coming. And in such a time of crisis, you pulled through, you came. It was a pleasure finally getting to meet you. But please tell us what you thought, my friend.
I could not be more elated by everyone I met, the entire experience, the conference itself. It is remarkable that you and Laura were able to put together, and everybody else who played a part of it. Big thanks and gratitude goes to Sven for all of the work that he did to make it happen as well. These perfect recordings. And every moment of my time there was exhilarating. I enjoyed all of the different personalities, the different accents, everybody coming together as a single people, which is exactly what we are. Single people, as I said in the speech, with many countries, single people with many languages, a single people with many accents, and yet the exact same biospirit. We're able to come together as brothers and sisters on any continent, and irrespective of whether or not plague is sweeping the land and whatever else we have to deal with. But it was so, for me, I have to say, and I said this a bit last night when I was on with Mr. George, we did an after hours. Everybody's speech prior to me had given me so much momentum that giving my speech, well, I guess there was a, on one hand, I mentioned it during the speech, Mark. I was like, you had to put me after all of the great speakers, didn't you? You had to put me after everybody had gotten up there and done such a fabulous job. But at the same time, everybody had just so invigorated and energized me that it made really my part that I had to contribute to easy for what I had to do. So, but all these gentlemen here, everyone I met, the women were beautiful. The men were handsome. There was a vast number of women, too, at this conference. There definitely has been a enormous change in what's happening in our world across the West. The tide has turned. The civic nationalists are dying. Nationalism, the old antiquated nationalism, is dying. Conservatism is dying. People have been reared for generation after generation into anti-whiteism now. And they are beginning to lose, because of the peer-to-peer communication that we talked about, this feeling that they have to make amends for something that they never did wrong. And they go to these parties that are supposed to be, in these groups, the organizations that are supposed to be the antithesis to those who rabidly push anti-whiteism. And they just get more of the same. It's packaged a little different. Sometimes they're promised certain things and then they get shalom, but shalomed, maybe we can make that into a verb now. But nonetheless, these people, they go, they experience these things from these so-called leaders, so-called groups that are supposed to represent them. And generation after generation, they're finding that their interests are being left to the wayside. Their interests, in fact, are being harmed. And so quite naturally now, they're beginning to look elsewhere. And what's really important is that we have two really important things, I think, that are happening at the same time. And that is, one, we have this plague, and rest assured there will be more in the future that disrupt the societal context. But we also have people getting fed up with controlled oppositional movements. So this really is feeding our efforts, making the soil ripe for us. If we don't take advantage of this, it'll be our fault. If we look back 10 years from now and say, well, we didn't accomplish anything, then the only people we will have to blame is ourselves. We did not work hard enough. We did not strive hard enough. We were not courageous enough when we had the opportunity to do so. 10 years from now, 15 years from now, there may not be another opportunity to gain the momentum that we have to gain over this decade, a decade that is going to be full of societal shifts like we are seeing right now. Nations that are becoming intrinsically healthy again because people are becoming intrinsically healthy. When you have nothing but luxury, you can indulge fantasies. You can, you know, the women of both sexes can act like, well, feelings are more important than lives. Feelings are more important than facts. But when times get tough, it gets very difficult for those ladies of both sexes to make such arguments. Increasingly, people want to return to a state that is safer, a state that will preserve not only themselves, but those immediately around them. And they begin looking primarily instinctually to those who are like themselves. They begin wanting to harmonize and resonate with those who have the same biospirits. So we have this magnetism working for us as well at this moment. We have to be there for these folks. If it means that we have to work through sickness, if it means we have to work through corona, people know I've come down with a dry cough, which is actually one of the first signs of a corona, and it's a little worse today. But it's probably just allergies or a cold or something other than corona, even though it's all over Northern Virginia now. But even if we have to work through corona, even if we have to work through, like I was telling people last night, I had to be able to travel to protect everyone I communicate with. I had to put together a travel phone and an economical travel laptop so that no one's information would be on any of my devices, nothing saved, nothing pictures. So that if the governments, these anti-white governments, decided they wanted to take these items from me and go through them, it would be fine. Everyone would be safe. These are the kind of things we have to do, because I know at times it's easy to believe that we are kind of in a game, in a story, and we can step out of this and everything is fine and we can go back to our, you know, humble, disappeared lives, just working and consuming, when the reality is this is the jungle. The government isn't ours. We don't have governments. We don't have countries. They've been taken from us a long time ago. And so to be able to come together in the midst of a beautiful land, the United Kingdom, with beautiful people everywhere we went. I mean, I couldn't believe Mark driving me around, ladies and gentlemen. Let me just give you a quick, and then I want to pass it back. But I know everybody's curious. They're like, well, what's it like to be able to be chauffeured by Mark Collett? And what's it like to be able to spend time? First of all, this is a true hero and gentleman, Mark is. And I mentioned on the past couple streams, by the way, Mark, I don't know if you know, when I flew in on the A380, landed, ran off of that plane. Fortunately, those who had originated in the UK, we didn't have to go through the same hoops that those who originated elsewhere had to go through. We did have to fill out this, and I took pictures of it and I shared with everybody this questionnaire. And we did have to have this camera look at us, I guess, for fever or whatever it might be. But I rushed home. I rushed right into the office and I began streaming. I had to tell people about this conference and how magnificent it was. So 8 hours, 15 minutes later, I had just eaten breakfast with you practically, and I was already back in Virginia on another continent, thanks to the white man's technology, both the ability to travel and the ability to get on that tech and reach out to people. And one of the first things I told people was at the end of this conference, after I spoke, Mark Collett stands up, and we're supposed to be the bad guys. Jared George put this great last night, that we're supposed to be the bad guys after I talked about this again. Mark stands up, and who's he thinking about? He's not thinking about himself and how much money he could bring into himself, how much money he could bring into X, Y, or Z. His first thought, ladies and gentlemen, was to the staff at this location, because he knew that they are going to have their conferences over the next 3 months potentially canceled, their jobs potentially in jeopardy. And so he made an appeal to everyone there, and they answered that appeal, speaking not only to Mark's good character, sterling character, but to everyone who was present. Mark said, these folks are going to be potentially out of work, certainly out of work, potentially out of a job. So we got a box up front. If you can spare some quid, please drop it in there for these wonderful people and the work that they did for us. And this I say because I wanted to connect it to the fact that I have a frame of reference when it comes to conferences. I've been going to white positive conferences for decades. And I can tell you this without question, this is right up at the very top, no exaggeration, and it is for several reasons. And one of the primary reasons I mentioned last night, this wasn't merely another get-together of ain't it bad. Look, here's another bad story of what's going on in my area. Here's another bad thing, and you get the same thing. It depends on what sort of sphere inside the white positive sphere, ladies and gentlemen, that you're in. But if the conference is in more of a political sphere, you hear endlessly about how awful it is that in America, the Democrats get away with this or that or the other thing. And the Republicans aren't allowed to do this. So that some Republican is dragging his feet and won't do something conservative. It's just endless bitching and complaining. Nothing constructive, nothing proactive, nothing productive. And if you're in some other part of the sphere, then they're talking about the crimes. It's endless complaints about the crimes of this group or that group, and they harmed these people or that people, and why don't people get it? Again, endless complaints, nothing positive. People get together to commiserate about how awful it is. And there used to be, we would tell jokes about this eat meat and retreat, and all, we had these slang terms here in the States for this really loser type of behavior. And we talked, I talked also about how in the US, we also get this endless pedantic prattling. Very incandescently bright people will get together to talk about their favorite philosophers and talk about they can think deeper than the next guy. And in all of these cases, I would say, okay, this is all fine, but we need to be working on changing our world. We need to be working on recapturing our destiny. And folks would bristle at this. Ladies and gentlemen, Mark doesn't bristle at this. These gentlemen that are with us today, the Absolute State of Britain, they don't bristle at this. These, everyone here at this conference was productive. This is a North Star. It's something completely different than we have seen. I didn't hear a single complaining comment or conversation. Everybody was excited about opportunities. Everybody was thinking constructive thoughts. I could not be more invigorated by the entire experience. Mark drives like Mario Andretti through the countryside. And we had a fantastic time racing to and fro. Bought me wonderful meals at these little restaurants we stayed at. Showed me these beautiful little British, English countryside. And what we talked about, this is the thing. What does two guys, two thought influencers in the white positive sphere, what are they talking about when they drive down the road? Well, the anti-white narrative would have you believe something really grotesque. Mark and I were talking about saving people. Mark and I were talking about helping people improve their lives. Mark and I were talking about the wildlife that we were seeing as we drove down the road. This is what the future looks like, ladies and gentlemen. And that energy and that enthusiasm was absolutely infused in the totality of this conference. I would like to see more of these. I totally agree with Absolute State of Britain that we could see many hundreds of people, many, many hundreds, even thousands in the near future. This is the right direction. This is the way to go. We are a single people with many countries. No more of this abstractionist ideas. No more of all of this nonsense that's been defeated in the past. This is the truth, the light and the victory and the path ahead. And Mark Collett is a sterling leader for us to follow. I pass it back to you, brother.
Thank you. The one thing I have to disagree with you on is my driving. I am regularly mocked for driving like an old woman. So no one's ever complimented me on driving speedily before. I'm well renowned for never ever going over the speed limit. But I do have a few things to say. I'm not going to make a big speech. And I'd like to thank everyone for their kind words so far about the conference. I've said this on other streams, but it's important to say it here because this is my channel and it's the show that I've been associated with for 145 episodes under two different names. And I want to say this, it was in my 20 years of nationalism, there has never been an event in Britain like that. There has never been an event that passed off so smoothly, so peacefully, lacked any trouble. There has never been an event where people have universally come away from it so pleased. And I have had a lot of people write to me and a lot of people speak to me and thank me for bringing this about. And I just want to say that it isn't me that did this. It's not all me. And I shouldn't be getting the credit for this because I've been talking about one thing consistently since I did this show right back in its infancy with Tara McCarthy. And it's a theme that runs throughout my book, The Fall of Western Man. And that theme is community. The theme is that we are nothing alone, that we are only who we are because of our group, that we are as strong as we are because we're part of a group of people that changed the world like no other group of people ever had or ever could. And I've always talked about that community. And the reason this meeting was such a success was because of that community. It wasn't just because of me. It was because also of people like Sven Longshanks, who helped me arrange the event and did such amazing audio work and then rushed all the way back home so that he could upload that audio so people who weren't at the conference could listen to it. It was thanks to the other wonderful five speakers, Jason, Dion, Simon Harris, Laura, Millennial Woes, it was down to all of the other people who came and helped in small ways, whether it giving a lift at the redirection point, being an influencer who came and then went home and spread the good word, whether it was people like Lucy Brown who came and helped us film the event and has since been editing videos all week to make sure people have got the actual video footage for their channel. It was people like Shazia Hobbs, Chris from TR Talks, the lads from the Absolute State of Britain, young lads like Barclay Walsh. It was people like James Goddard, who people were lifted to see new converts in the room. But on a deeper level, I've got to say the thanks should be shared by every single person in that room. Everyone who came to that event, everyone who got on a train or a bus, everyone who made the long drive, everybody that could have stayed at home for a variety of reasons, but instead came out and helped pack out that room. And the feeling to be stood there in front of hundreds of wonderful people, top quality people, everyone dressed wonderfully, everyone presented perfectly, everyone being polite and courteous and shaking hands and meeting people. That was what made the event. It was all of us. What made the event is us resurrecting what we lost. Our enemies have taken our community from us. They've shattered us. They've left us isolated and atomized. But last Saturday, we took the first steps toward rebuilding that. And it felt absolutely electric. And that is what makes an event. It isn't just the speakers. It isn't just the sound guy. It isn't just the girl doing the videos. It's every single person who contributed. And I am just so, so proud. And I feel so privileged to have played the role in it that I did. And I want to thank everybody from the bottom of my heart who has believed in me, supported me, and has helped with this project, who's helped get Patriotic Alternative off the ground. Because for so long, the nationalist movement in the UK has been in the doldrums. It's been little shattered groups. It's been people who are disorganized. It's had disunity, fallouts, factionalism. And finally, that's coming to an end. We are coming together, and just look what we can achieve when we do. So thank you from the bottom of my heart to absolutely everyone who supported the event and came. We did something that our enemies said we couldn't do. In just 6 months, we've almost doubled our numbers in the face of this pandemic. And we've done it without compromising one bit on quality. So thank you again. And I really hope to see so many more of you at the next one. So now, after the conference talk, I think we have to segue into the issue of the coronavirus. That was the one thing that we thought might put a dampener on it. And I think seeing the way that Boris has flip-flopped on this, seeing the death toll double today alone, and seeing some very worrying statistics, and I'm just going to kick you off with these statistics. Boris Johnson said the overwhelming majority of people in Britain will get coronavirus. Now, the overwhelming majority from a statistical point of view is classed, I thought it was as 80%, but it's not. The overwhelming majority is classed as 70% plus of a population. So let's work on 70%. So if 70% of 70 million get the disease, that will be 49 million people in Britain infected. If the death toll stays at what it currently is, which is at 3.64%, the number of people who will die, if Boris Johnson's correct and the overwhelming majority get it, the number of people that will die will be 1.78 million people. That's all factual. That is based on the current statistics, the current projections, what Boris Johnson has said, and also the current rate of death from infection. If that takes place, the big concern here is the vast majority of those 1.78 million people are going to be elderly white people. Yeah. And this is going to shift the demographics against us in a very sudden and brutal way. But what's more, I would not put it past the Conservative government to say that the 1.78 million people, the elderly pensioners that will have died, need to be replaced by young, sexually active, virile migrants who will again speed our replacement even further. This is something that is a concern. And the fact is, it is a problem, but it is only a problem because of open borders. It is only a problem because of the government's slavish commitment to multiculturalism. It's only a problem because no one wants to be called racist for screening people. It's only a problem because they think that GDP and open borders and free trade is more important than your mother, father, grandmother, grandfather's life. And now the public are starting to see that the government doesn't care about them. They are just consumer units. And I would even go as far to say, if 1.78 million pensioners did die, there would be people in the Conservative government rubbing their hands with glee at the reduced pension burden. And that is what these people will be thinking of. And I can assure you of one thing. If our enemies can turn this crisis into a way to further reduce us in number and take us even closer to that, what was originally the 2060s tipping point, they will do that. Now, I know that the lads from TASOB have got a lot to say about this, especially Nativist Concern. He's somebody who's really looked into this. So, guys, take as much time as you need. We'll go around the group, finishing up with Jason. What are your thoughts on the current state of the coronavirus, and how do you think this is going to play out?
Yeah, absolutely right, Mark. The anti-white agenda remains exactly the same. And no sooner have the bodies been burnt of hundreds of thousands or possibly even over a million of our own, the leftists will immediately be calling for their replacement by aliens. I hope our people are well prepared. Since we were talking about how this will evolve for the last few weeks on TASOB, but now it's actually happened and we're in lockdown. We need to see this as a great opportunity for spreading the nationalist message to the general population. It's now that the population are going to start being short the resources and the comforts that they're accustomed to, and having a high level of fear of disorder. Only today there were reports of food shopping destined for old ladies being robbed by a feral gang of what our lying media calls youths in Croydon, much like in 2011. And people will be relying on their families, friends and neighbours once again, and consciously or not, they will realise the value of their own people, which a great man once said is the most precious thing we possess. Things could only get worse for the availability of food as the global supply chains come under pressure. And this exposes the globalist system we live under. How many people even realize we're a net importer of food? We have the most fertile pastures in the world, bar almost none, and abundant fish stocks, but we still have to import food for the replacement population. Most people haven't even tasted a nutritious homegrown vegetable bursting with flavor since we strayed so far from nature into this system of consuming garbage. Our people are dissatisfied, but they don't understand quite why. But they're learning to distrust the mainstream, and it's on us to show them the way to salvation. I mean, it sounds grandiose, but we don't have to live like this. We don't have to feel that we live in a foreign country. We don't have to see our daughters, sisters, and friends raped on an industrial scale. We don't have to be subjected to anti-white hatred on talk shows. We don't have to watch the adverts produced by a certain tribe that seek to usher on the destruction of our people through miscegenation. And we don't have to send our best young men to go and die for a foreign people's benefit. Mm-hmm. We don't have to let our girls destroy themselves with sexual liberation propaganda, industrial scale abortion, and working for the corporations until their fertility window's finished. Mm-hmm. Our people are capable of absolutely anything, and we don't need a single other person of a foreign tribe to help us, ultimately. So tell the neoliberals and the university's lefties that when you're telling them, when they're telling you about some cheap foreign doctor, computer programmer, or engineer, we don't need them. Our people have virtually been instructed not to pursue these worthwhile careers by an elite that absolutely hates them. Yeah. And our working class are the worst performers in school. They even have grants aimed at helping them blocked by a politically correct fear, as we saw in a school close to me recently. So when you're in the comments of our enemies on social media and any topics come up, write, there's another way, join Patriotic Alternative Movement. Politics is about energy, and despite hardship and many of our people being put in prison over the last few years, we've created a wave of energy. So let's ride it and get back what we deserve. Everyone out there can chip in, and this year has been brilliant so far. There will be adversity down the world as the anti-white censors and bullies come to destroy this energy, but we need to stay engaged and on task, and just leave nothing on the table wishing you'd done more when you're looking at your children in 20 years. I've been on such a run since the PA conference myself. I've been creating memes and videos, and I suppose many of us are going to be off work for a while. So absolutely make the most of it. I'll pass it back.
He did say pass it back, Mark, but if you want me to take on the spot instead.
No, I said go around the group. Yeah. I wasn't expecting to comment on that. It was a very powerful piece. But yeah, you guys just go around the group and discuss this.
It's very much a double-edged sword. So on the one hand, our enemies, you know, whether or not you want to believe they manufactured this crisis, some people think they did. You know, I'm not so big on that, but regardless of what's actually caused it, our enemies are very willing to exploit it for their own gains. So that's definitely something we need to worry about. But at the same time, it makes a lot of our arguments for us. It's like, well, yeah, you know, we would be safer if we didn't have, you know, open borders where anyone can come in, because we wouldn't get the virus here in the first place. Yeah, we would be better off if we, you know, grew enough food in our own country that we could feed ourselves, that we wouldn't have to import it from elsewhere, that we didn't have everything made in China that then needs to be shipped over here. We've got no manufacturing to make anything for ourselves anymore. And it's just entirely unsustainable. Something that really worries me, though, is they've been talking about, amongst other things, They want to ban the use of cash because they say it harbors the virus and it's going to be another way of transmission. And the problem with these sorts of things is once they introduce a measure like that, it's very hard to go back. And it's something that our enemies want to push because, you know, they're shutting us out of payment processors. They don't want us to have bank accounts. They don't want us to be able to support each other financially. They just want complete control there so that, you know, you can only do what the system allows you to do. And it's really worrying.
Yeah, I had a bit of a boomer moment there, I'm afraid. So I dropped out for a minute, but hopefully I didn't miss my turn. Just going back to the numbers that Mark mentioned, basically the number crunching based on Boris Johnson talking about an overwhelming majority. So if we were to assume something anywhere within, you know, a million either way of the possible 1.78 million death toll, The thing with that is, you know, you've only got to think of the arguments we're subjected to in favour of post-war immigration, which is that, you know, we needed post-war, you know, we needed immigration from the Commonwealth to rebuild Britain. Put that in some sort of perspective, we lost 451,000 people in that war out of a pre-war population of about 48 million. You know, imagine the amount of lies and revisionism we'd get if this was, as Mark suggested, and, you know, I put nothing past them, used as a means of opening the, you know, a justification, a pretext for opening the floodgates. You know, again, you know, as Euro says, there's a lot of speculation as to the possible, you know, the origin of this. Simon had some very interesting things to say about it during his speech on Saturday. Not necessarily in terms of the origins, because we can only speculate on that. Because it sort of doesn't matter, because with all the power and all the resources our occupiers have got, they will, you know, they will look for and most likely find ways to use this to their advantage. I mean, I echo Euro as well on the possible pretext for phasing out cash. I mean, that would benefit the powers that be in a multitude of ways. You know, you think of the amount of cash in hand businesses and things like that. Now, a lot of those, as it happens, are actually operated by, for nefarious purposes, non-Britons. You know, there are certain ethnic minorities who are very well known for hand car washes and various other sorts of things. I mean, again, on the elderly only shopping hours, you know, I was talking about this in my family today and making the point that, well, you know, all that's going to happen there is, not saying it shouldn't happen, but, you know, the usual amoral predators and the dregs of society will seek to capitalize on that in the way that they do. And sure enough, within moments of talking about it, you got the first reports, you know, screenshots from Facebook of exactly that happening in, of all places, Croydon. What do we know about the demographics of Croydon? Yeah, you know, and Dion, actually, who spoke on Saturday as well, was talking this morning about a law that's been introduced in Denmark prohibiting gatherings, I think, of more than 10 people. Now, laws of that sort, they'd be a very useful thing to keep, you know, keep around from the establishment's point of view if they can just be quietly retained and then, you know, applied selectively. So, you know, I liked a lot of what Nate said, but we've also, you know, not to sort of bring the mood down, we've got to ready ourselves for all sorts of things they could do. But there are no doubt ways that we could use this to our advantage. But I mean, yeah, you know, when you think of the insidious ways that people tried to justify what happened after the Second World War based on, in the scheme of that war, relatively modest casualties. If this thing really gets bad, yeah, wouldn't that be perfect? Replace, you know, hundreds of thousands, if not a couple of million old white people with doctors and engineers, as we're going to be told they are. Yeah.
It's very telling as well, the amount in which people are panicking. And we can definitely blame the government on that. Or we can blame that on the government, you know, in part, because originally they came out and they said, oh, no, it's all going to be fine. Just wash your hands. And then they did this turnaround where it's like, oh, actually, you know, everyone's going to get it. And millions of people are going to die. It's no wonder people started panicking. They could have eased people into it. But it really shows that people don't trust the government. They don't trust the government to protect them, you know, because there's so many other things that the government is failing us on, which we don't have to spell out in detail because we're all aware of the problems. But people are worried. And even if this coronavirus kills literally no one, It's destroying the establishment because it's destroying people's belief in the system, the belief that everything is going to work out all right.
Precisely. That is one of the most important things that we need to use when we talk to our friends, family, and strangers. We need to be talking about how the stability that they've grown accustomed to is going to be a thing of the past. It'll be just in the history books. If they continue to go down this road of support for anti-whiteism, and all things that anti-whiteism engenders. So why is the disease, this is what we say in these conversations, why is this plague? And why not call it a plague when we talk about it with our friends, family, and strangers? The news is talking about it as without necessarily using the word plague, but this is the kind of thing that will unsettle people. They don't want to live in a world where there are plagues. So we can say, you know, how did we end up with a plague? How did we end up with a scenario that the entire country is becoming infected? Potentially millions could die of the white race around the world. And who's it going to be? It's going to be our seniors. It's going to be our weakest members. It's going to be our sick members of our community, the people we need to be protecting. Is this what you want as a regularity? Every 2-3 years, another plague. What wasn't done? We could pose the question to these people that could have been done. If anti-whiteism wasn't in place, if that wasn't the ruling ideology, well, one of those things that could have immediately been done was all travel banned from all of Asia. Because surely if this began in China, then it's going to spread to the region. And so banning travel from Asia would have been the most sensible thing to do. Where would we be today if all of travel had been banned? How many of these seeding, as they're referring to it in the United States, took place as a consequence for people who were maybe even you know, business or what have you, traveling from Asia to our countries, sitting down. In fact, early on, we heard about these individual cases, business owners and the like from Asia, sitting down in Paris, sitting down in London, sitting down in DC and New York, and sharing the plague with everyone around them. So there are many things that we could do, it could have done, and could continue to do. Like, for example, this. Because we have allowed, we don't have a governance of our people for the well-being of our people. We have all of these brilliant labs that are working independently of each other so that they can vie for the financial prize of, are they going to be the ones who cure the coronavirus, or is the other lab going to be the one that cures the coronavirus? Obviously, this is a moment in time where if this thing is as deadly as it is, a government that is serving the well-being of the people would say, okay, capitalism goes out the window. You all are going to put your brightest minds together now. There's not going to be this independent research scattered all over the place. And, you know, where you're going to have your secrets over there so that maybe you'll be the ones that get the cash prize in the end. And some other lab over there will have their secrets. Forget about all of that. Now we're talking about life and death. Forget about your financial remuneration when it comes to the well-being and welfare of our people. So, you know, they're working all, you have all of these different factories that are working or labs that are working on vaccines independently and sharing the code. That's it. Of course, we have ideas about where this came from. But nonetheless, sharing the code and no more, they should be compelled, forced by a healthy government to work together. I also want to mention before I just forget quickly, I want to congratulate Laura again and her fiance on their engagement, because that is that's truly a remarkable thing. And I couldn't be happier, and I can't wait for their babies to be born. And they're going to be born at the greatest time in history, the greatest moment in history. Their children are going to be able to read about their parents in their history books. I guarantee you that. But when it comes to this crisis, we need to say, for those who we're speaking with, that all crises, and this is something that is important, because the way we think is essentially our tools. The dialectics that we use, they're essentially our tools. And if you're thinking with broken tools, you're not going to end up with a product that is accurate or will work, et cetera, in the end. So if you are coming to the conclusion, if you're exploring in not in sort of a frivolous way, if this is really your meaningful exploration about what to do in the here and now while we are in the midst of this plague, this anti-white engendered plague, the thing that we should be thinking about, the lens that we should be using, is that the anti-whites are always going to use every crisis to advance anti-whiteism. So they're going to immediately see, given their sociopolitical beliefs, their racial beliefs, etc., opportunities right now, opportunities like, let's get rid of cash, opportunities like, and remember, when we talk about these things, it's not good enough to just say, well, these are just wealthy folks and that they just want to make themselves wealthier. That does nothing to weld us together as a people. You have to talk about these people as anti-whites enriching themselves, anti-whites empowering themselves off the bodies of our people around the globe. So if we think or we explore the what's happening right now as a function of some long plan conspiracy of some cabal, we are never going to get to the right answers. We're never going to be able to communicate to that that message to our friends, family, and strangers in a way that will persuade them. They might think you're crazy. Even if you're right, they might think you're crazy. We need to be talking about the outcomes and the horror of those outcomes, as we're doing here today, that we're seeing all across our lands. People are not able to go to work. They're not able. Many will lose their jobs. We also need to think about, though, in our specific community, that it's not all dire. I mean, the economies of the West can be turned back on like this. Don't let somebody tell you that they can't be. It can overnight, if everything opened again, overnight, the economy would be steamrolling ahead. It would be a bull market. So don't worry about that. And also don't worry about, there are going to be industries that are going to suffer, but there are industries right now that are booming like never before. You think the grocery store with the empty shelves, that they're not laughing up their sleeves? They've just made the next 5 months of profits in a week. Many of these places, restaurants immediately had their food bought out from underneath of them because people knew they weren't going to be able to go there very, very much longer. health companies that sell thermometers and everything that you might imagine, sanitizer. They've sold their next year's worth of profit. They've made their next year's worth of profit like this. They'll be spending their money so that they can be there first to make sure, so you'll have the goods and to make sure that they can continue making profit on into the future. This money is not going to disappear. So the world is not coming to an end. But this sort of instability is the kind of thing that we need to be talking to everyone about and tying the bow around it of anti-whiteism. This guillotine that is falling on the necks of the West is anti-whiteism. And this sort of thing and many more just like it are headed our way if we continue down this path and continue supporting structures, systems, and individuals in governance and monetary governance and the like that are anti-white. We share that with our friends, family, and strangers. And when things start to get a little better, they will continue to heed your warnings. And they'll continue to wonder, when's the next pandemic? When is the next economic crash? Maybe I shouldn't put as much faith in these anti-white elites as I did before. And getting them to say that, if nothing else, is an enormous victory for us because they'll come around sooner or later.
Well, thank you for everyone's thoughts on that. I've just got to say a couple of things I've unfortunately forgot. I name checked a lot of people. I realized now I said I was going to forget somebody and I forgot Horus. Sorry. Horus was also there and it was fantastic to meet him. And also, massive congratulations to Laura and her fiance. When we heard the news, that was just the perfect end to the weekend to find out they've got engaged. I believe they met at PA events, so they could be the first patriotic alternative marriage. That is truly something to celebrate. And the reason I didn't lead with that when we came into the show is I didn't think she'd officially announced it on anything, but whether she has or hasn't now, it's been blurted out, so congratulations.
No, she did. She did. It was in her little video blog thing she did over the weekend.
Said that she was hiding that issue.
No, not as far as I'm aware, no.
Well, I hope she has announced it, because otherwise I'm sending her after you. So.
All right, I'll have to reckon with that then.
You have to reckon with that. So that sort of gets the end of the discussion of coronavirus, and we do have quite a lot of super chats. So we're going to read those out and read some questions from the audience and put them to the group. If you haven't contributed yet, you can still contribute via Entropy. The link is in the chat. It's in the description of the show. It's on Telegram and it's on Twitter. Also, you can ask questions via Entropy, and the best ones are voted up. And those best questions are asked to the group. And finally, if you want to contribute in other ways, the best way is Bitcoin. The link to the Bitcoin is in the description of the show. So thank you very much. Now, let's do some of these super chats. Well, in fact, all of them. William Harris gave $25. Thank you very much. He said, congratulations on a successful conference, a major white pill for British nationalism. Thank you for all you do. Well, thank you very much, William. And also, for William and everybody else here, if you want to speak to Laura and congratulate her in person, she's appearing with Unwashed directly after this show. Ordonator gave £10. Thank you very much. He said, thanks, guys, for what you're doing. Favorite nationalist podcast. One of the best parts of the week is walking the Thames, listening to the latest episode on a weekend morning. Well, thank you very much. Marty Morosley gave £10. Thank you very much. He said, all right, everybody, shout out to the Taysob crew for brightening up Saturday mornings. Tell Euro to stop complaining about my $5 donation. Every little helps. And it was their first one ever. Well, thank you very much for that. Barak Shear gave $50. Thank you very much. That's very generous. He said, the nationalist community can do a lot worse than get self-sufficient. I agree. And I just want to touch on that. I bet if the corona, my granddad, and I've said this before on the show, he used to grow all his own vegetables. He had a huge vegetable patch. He used to pickle his own beetroot, pickle his own onions. They would jar things up for winter, so they had supplies of pickled food. And every Sunday, when my grandma used to make a big Sunday dinner for the family, she'd send my granddad out into the garden to pull fresh carrots, pull fresh potatoes straight from the soil. It was literally coming out of the ground on the morning and going onto the plate early afternoon. That was how fresh the vegetables were. But how many people today grow any food? There is no self-sufficiency. And when you start to get to the point we're at now, you can see how the lack of self-sufficiency is a big problem. And I was saying this about finances. There may well be a big depression now as well, because when you think about it, a lot of people today live within less than £1,000 of the buffer. So in other words, they have less than £1,000 in savings. Now, people who have less than £1,000 in savings, but have large credit card bills, who have huge regular monthly outgoings, Sky TV, maybe HPI on a car, maybe they are repaying a loan on a computer or a TV or a sofa from DFS. All of these people have these huge outgoings on credit. Very little in stock, virtually no buffer. One or two bad months could literally see huge millions and millions of people go into the red. This is another one of the problems associated with building everything on this credit. Because if it all goes wrong, everybody's going down. Do you guys have any thoughts on this?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm seeing people in the chat deal when only a few thousand died in China. I mean, they're sounding like Trump 10 days ago. He was saying, oh, we're going to spend $3.5 billion on coronavirus, and the Democrats want to spend more, but we're keeping it to $3.5 billion. And now, just over a week later, $13 trillion of his fake growth has been wiped off the US stock market. And I doubt he'll be reelected now. So be prepared for a vicious anti-white regime in the US led by the child sniffer and an anti-white Supreme Court nomination. And this month has exposed what a castle built on sand this financial system that rules over our lives actually is. It's an anti-white bear moth built for the benefit of a tiny proportion and often foreign part of the population. And to renew our civilization, we need to provide a future for our children. We need to reject this feckless greed of the capitalist system as it now exists and put people before big capital. European family was with property rights. That's what's the foundation of Western civilization. But it's the replacement family and the rights for monopolistic big capital that is the current system. And after three buildings in Manhattan collapsed by themselves and definitely nothing to do with urban moving systems or any dancing Israelis, $8 trillion was spent on wars in the Middle East on what was proven to be a pack of lies pushed by the co-ethnics of a certain Levantine state. And shortly after that, in 2008, we saw the subprime mortgage market and all its associated derivative products worth trillions of dollars disappear after, guess what, the diversity population couldn't repay the loans. And this black hole was bailed out by the central bank quantitative easing to the tune of more trillions. And now we've seen $13 trillion wiped off the Trump boom after his share buybacks for capitalist presidency collapsed. His legacy is now simply the betrayal of his promise to build a wall and limit mass immigration. And this system clearly isn't working for people of European descent. And we need to look back to the Wall Street crash and what followed. The political movements that followed that for inspiration, because they have all the answers for European people. So, you know, these are memes you can bring up in the comments over the next few months. People are going to be very angry that they've had their pensions wiped out. So, again, it's an opportunity for us to change our destiny.
Okay, we have got a question for the whole group on this. I'm going to move forward with this because obviously we do have a lot of questions tonight. Marty Morosley gave another £10. Thank you very much. And he said, here's a question for the whole panel, as I know some opinions diverge a little. How much of the general malaise and drama surrounding COVID-19 emanates from the facts, and how much is driven by the media stoking panic and the public's tendency towards anxiety and histrionic reaction? Let's go around the group there, starting with you, Nativist, then Euro, then Ayatollah, then No White Guild. How much of this is real and how much of this is media panic?
I think it's very real. I think it was actually underplayed to start with. My own dad is a bit of a boomer that doesn't trust the media, but he doesn't know quite how the system works. I try to explain it to him, but he always kind of reverts to liberal values, which is a bit disappointing. But don't forget, just 2 weeks ago, the exact same media were saying, oh, it's no big deal. You know, only the tiny proportion are at risk. And now 2 weeks later, we're looking at martial law and complete shutdown everywhere. It's not so much about the media pushing something. I think it's just democratic states just are led by absolute clowns. It's a complete underreaction, and then a bad plan following it that's now crashing the economy. We might even see more carnage in the long term because of how they've managed this economy. And this week has proven that half of people's pensions disappearing is possibly going to kill as many pensioners as the actual virus. So, you know, it's a system run by clowns, and we could do so much better.
Euro, what do you think? Overblown by the press, or?
Well, I mean, as I alluded to earlier, even if it is a bit overblown, I think it helps us in some ways. You know, the fact that people, they don't trust the government, they're not expecting the government to protect them anymore. You know, they're more focused on their family and, you know, the people more related to them, to their tribe, to their countrymen, as opposed to those people who just so happen to live in the same area, who have nothing in common with them. It's very encouraging. So, yeah.
Ayatollah, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think on the subject of panic, I think the panic seems to be within the corridors of power. Because I think if you look back, probably not much more than a week with the UK government, that there's, well, less than a week, really, there seems to have been a pretty dramatic shift. You know, they were talking a lot about, well, you know, herd immunity and so on and so forth. And now, you know, we're finally catching up with other parts of Europe, despite the fact that the warnings were there. You know, you look at what was going on with it in Italy. And, you know, granted, there are obviously circumstances in which the media will, you know, expressly not tell you about things they don't want you to know that's going on, or that certain interests do not want you to know is going on. You know, we know that all too well in our thing, you know, within our cause. I suppose there is, however, a time at which it really does just become a means of, you know, mass communication and control of the population in another way. And I suppose there are things they need people to know. Maybe I'm being a little bit naive and not sufficiently cynical, although, you know, cynical in a different way, I suppose. But, you know, I do wonder at this stage where it's very much just, you know, yeah, trying to, I mean, they're still saying, though, having said that, you know, I heard something today where they're saying to people, you know, don't bulk buy and don't panic. It's like, well, you know, it's a bit late for that. You know, but the whole thing of don't bulk buy, I mean, there's a nice little analogy with that, you know, with what Nate was saying before about, and what in fact, what you were saying initially, Mark, about people living close to the red line and what have you, and, you know, with very little buffer. You know, this is all downstream from a consumerist system, which ultimately not only plays upon people's limited time horizons, it's done a lot, really, through sort of mass social engineering with advertising and the offering of credit and the normalization of just relying on credit to actually, you know, further reduce people's time horizons and just to push things at people and to manipulate them. You know, I've not looked into it a lot, but I'm sure there are people listening who have. But, you know, from the little I know, you know, you look back at the history of advertising and the psychological analysis that goes into it. Certainly people like Edward Bernays, a relative of Sigmund Freud, who, you know, not to get too specific, but, you know, both from a background where they enjoy a big family meal on a Friday night, you know, things like pushing cigarettes to women and what have you, the amount of manipulation that's gone on, you know, we're seeing some of the fruits of that now, I think, in the way that people live. And yeah, when things do sort of go awry, as we're seeing now, there are a lot of people who are up against it.
I'll add that this is exactly the kind of thing that I expect to see from anti-whites. Something sprouts up that is deadly and ugly and contagious and can kill in a non-white country. And quite naturally, I would predict that the anti-whites would say, no big deal, nothing to worry about there. You don't ever be afraid of non-white people. Had this sprouted up in, say, Russia, for example, I think we would have seen a very different response from the anti-whites in the media and in the government, certainly from the Democrats in the United States. It would be, this is the killer virus that will sweep across the world. But since it was in a non-white country, in a non-white part of the continent, they decided, well, not such a big deal. Don't worry about it. Just, you know, wash your hands and everything will be fine. And now they're seeing that people are dying indeed. And as we talked about before, that this is novel. So the governments have to take these steps to prevent everyone from getting it all at once. Then the anti-whites are going to take different steps. But the what's important for us is that we use everything that is happening around the world. We use what the anti-whites are saying against them, because when we teach our brothers and sisters what the anti-whites are doing, they then see every act, no matter how persuasive it is, no matter how much the brilliant descendants, the afterbirths of Edward Bernays, put together an ad campaign. They then see the ad campaign as truth and proof of what we are providing them, rather than seeing something that manipulates their thinking and therefore their actions. Pass it back.
I think the threat is real, but I think the media have made things worse. The media, one supermarket somewhere in Britain, no one knows where it is, runs out of toilet paper, and the media make it that the world is running out of toilet paper. Everyone panics, buys toilet paper, and there's a problem. And I give you another good example of how the media do things which are absolutely stupid. Now, how many of you guys, I want to go around the group, it's just a yes, no thing. How many of you guys saw a very attractive young girl doing what was called the coronavirus challenge and licking a toilet seat?
Well, I don't think she was very attractive. I'll say that much. Certainly not after doing that.
Well, look, she was an attractive girl, and she was also a very clever girl, because what she obviously did was use some hand sanitizer or some an antibacterial wipe, wiped a toilet seat and licked it. Now, that's a stupid thing to do. It's a stunt. And if the media were sensible, if the media were responsible, they'd have ignored her. Okay? But she knew they wouldn't. Now, every single media outlet in the world has catapulted this girl into the stratosphere of fame. She's made over $100,000 in the last week alone from this little bubble of fame. Okay? She isn't some idiot. She just understands how the media works. And she played them, but they also played us. Because if the media was intelligent, they wouldn't be telling, and if the media was on our side, which they're obviously not, the media wouldn't be focusing on her. Because now thousands of other people who won't make hundreds and thousands of dollars off doing it will be doing equally stupid things to get their moment in the press. So what you have is some crazy symbiotic relationship where one person pulls a crazy stunt, and it's one person, it's a crazy stunt, it's not even real, but the media pick up on it as if it is real, push it out to billions of people worldwide as a big outrage thing. That one person gets super rich, which great for them, they've played the system. You know, I'm not knocking anyone for having a bit of forward thinking and making some money. But then, because the media have made this into a trend, which it isn't, it's one person pulling a stunt, then millions of other silly, immature Western kids who also want to be famous will probably go and do it for real. And that is exactly how the media work. The media takes something that isn't necessarily actually happening, or is a silly one-off, or is somebody pulling a stunt. They big it up to make it look as if it is something real. That one person gets rich and disappears, but then millions of other people go out and copy it and actually get ill or do something even stupider for their moment of fame. And this is how you know that the media are absolutely working against us. Because at a time like this, the media should be minimizing crazy stories like that that could actually spread panic, spread outrage, prevent, you know, lead young people to doing stupid things. But the media aren't. The media are bigging this up. They're finding the one supermarket that's run out of toilet rolls so that every supermarket runs out of toilet rolls. They're finding the one supermarket with a queue at a petrol station and a little sold out thing in the window so that there's a run on petrol. They're bigging up the girl who pulled some crazy stunt. So, you know, it was a get rich quick scheme. Because this is what the media do. They're working against us. And they always, always, always put a spotlight on the wrong thing. Just like Ayatollah said, they put the spotlight on the women smoking the cigarettes because they want Western women smoking cigarettes. And it's been happening. It's been happening for decades. It's just in overdrive now. But to doing it, but to be doing it at a time when there is a genuine threat shows just how despicable and shameless the media are. So does anyone want to add anything to that?
Yeah, if I may, what's interesting about what you're saying there, Martin, it's a very good point you make, is that there's a synergy in that as well with what I was saying about people's sort of consumptive tendencies in the world we live in now, which is the low time horizons, because a lot of the media operates in a very similar fashion. You know, as much as, you know, we're absolutely right to observe the top down patterns, you know, things like miscegenation propaganda and advertising, at the same time, at sort of lower, more trivial levels, you know, they're driven by the desire for clicks and sensation and what have you. And, you know, it's sort of all the times to be talking about things that go viral. Another sort of, not exactly a devil's advocate take, I suppose, on this, but another point would be a problem they have as well with this sort of thing, I suppose, is the democratization of media through social media. Now, we in our thing lament the partial reversal of since, you know, since 2016, because that was obviously a big in for us, if you like, in the run up to the Brexit election and the US election in 2016, the Brexit referendum rather. And obviously there've been a lot of steps to reverse that and to sort of astroturf social media. At the same time, there's still a lot of stupid stuff that goes on there. So somebody's, you know, a bit like what you were saying, Mark, somebody takes a video in a supermarket somewhere and they're like, oh, there's no toilet roll left. And then they've got a lot of followers, and then thousands of people retweet. It's like, oh my God, we totally run out of toilet roll. So everybody, you know, surges out and buys it. So I suppose that's another problem, is managing that. But yeah, that there is a broader trend in general, actually, just the sort of the high time preference, the low time horizons.
Speaking of you know, time preference and time horizons, I wasn't one of these people who was like so prepared months ahead of time, but I probably stocked up like a couple of weeks before everyone else. And I went down like the local Aldi and I got some toilet paper because it was like 25p a roll in the big boxes or whatever it was, the 24 packs. So I had those at home before everyone else started buying them. And I remember somebody saying on this Telegram chat to me afterwards, it's just like, oh, I went down the shops and some retards have gone and bought all the loo roll. I've only got three rolls left, and what if I run out? You know, God knows what will happen then. And I said, well, who's the retard? Is it the guy who's only got three rolls, or is it the guy who's gone out there ahead of time and made sure he's had enough?
Just to add to the media discussion, there was a girl a couple of years ago in the US, I think she was 12 or 13, and she appeared on one of these garbage talk shows, and she went with the line, catch me outside. That girl then went on to become a millionaire and get a US tour based on being an absolute ghetto scumbag on a national TV program.
She was a white girl as well. She was a white girl.
She is a world girl that's been totally subverted by a culture of a foreign people. But this
there is nothing worse in this world than a fot.
This is exactly the sort of crap that the media will push now. And it's just brainwashing the population. I mean, in Britain, we've got ITV, I think it's ITV. They were running this program called The Masked Singer. And it looked like something out of like devil worshipping ceremony, like absolutely demonic sort of chants from the crowd going, take it off, take it off. When they're talking about just a singer dressed up in a fancy dress outfit, it was just... The degeneration we're seeing in the media is just unbelievable. Even 10 years ago, you wouldn't have expected anything like this. What else was I going to say after that? Oh, I'll pass it on to someone else. But yeah, this is what we're accustomed to now. Nothing real anymore. How often do we even get a history documentary? How often are we even led to know where our people came from and what we were doing in previous times?
Yeah, and I just want to add something to this as well. There are always going to be people in the chat who say like, oh, you know, the girl's terrible and she shouldn't have pulled the stunt and, oh my God, she's despicable as well. And I've got to slightly disagree with that. And I'll tell you why. Girls like that just like many young men who do similar things, are very much victims of this system. They're brought up being told, look, you're an attractive young girl. Don't go out, get a husband, get married, have children, raise those children well. The best thing you can do is pose in your underwear on Instagram and pull crazy stunts to get famous. And don't take your hatred out on that girl. Take your hatred out on the system that turned her from somebody who might have been a good mother and a good wife into what she is. She's slavishly following to the nth degree what has been laid out in front of her. Well, what does that mean? Well, she may be deeply defective, I don't know. But she may be the kind of person that if what was laid out in front of her was much better, she might be a better person. You've got to remember, if people tell young people that it's cool and fun and profitable to do stupid things, and to her credit, she's made a six-figure sum in a week. You know, she's probably made more than we'll all earn in 3-4 years in a single week. You know, if the media tell people to do that, who are you going to be mad at? You know, the blonde-haired, blue-eyed young girl who's just doing what she's told, or the horrible, disgusting, warped people who led her around by the nose and made her perform like a circus animal. I implore you, if there's anything you take away from this show tonight, reserve your anger and hatred for those in the media who have done this to our people. Jason, is there anything you want to add before we move on?
No, I think you all covered it brilliantly there.
There's the only thing I'd add to that is yes, our enemies are pushing this on our people and our women especially, but I think there does need to be a certain amount of social shaming for people to do that, because if there's not, then it just encourages it more. And, you know, it's not like all women are like that. There's some brilliant women, especially in this movement, who are nothing like that, you know. So
what, look, I don't want to get into a debate about this, but my personal philosophy is, yes, there does need to be a degree of shame, but we also have to help these people and show them something better. And when I do see these people doing things that they shouldn't, I try not to see something terrible. I try to see the good that could have been if that person hadn't been corrupted, because otherwise you end up giving yourself into, you end up hating your own brothers and sisters for what they've been turned into. And I just can't do that, because it's a negative way to live. I reserve that anger for the people that turn them into the monsters that they've become.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, ultimately, we need social shame, but we're in a way past that point, because the people leading the culture absolutely hate us, and they use their mechanisms of control to enforce the destruction of our people. If you take that girl on his example, she's genetically almost exactly the same as her grandmother, who in the 1950s would have been acting in a completely different way. It's only because the people that are are destroying our culture through mechanisms like the Frankfurt School and the media they control, that they have turned our people into this degenerate disgrace.
Yeah. Well, we do have lots of super chats to get through. This has been a really interesting bit. This is the kind of point where I wish we had a 3-hour show. Grista Tesson gave $10. Thank you very much. He said, Swede here. Who listens to every one of your episodes on TRS? Love you, lads. Give me your best Birmingham impersonations. You too, Mark. We'll start with nativist Euro, Ayatollah, no white guilt, then me. Best Birmingham impressions.
Best Birmingham impression. Why are you asking for that one?
That was quite good. Euro?
I'm not really good at this stuff, but I guess Birmingham. I'm from Birmingham.
To be honest, Euro, that just sounded Danish, to tell you the truth, mate. And I mean, native, you sounded a bit like an old school Liverpool accent, like one of the Beatles. Having said that, I'm sort of doing that now myself. So what about you, Mark?
Birmingham. I can't do accents. Like, I can't do it. I can't do it. I can only do that one accent that I always do for the moron accent that people enjoy, but I'm not, I don't have anything moronic to read out. So I'm sorry. I'm not going to ask Snow White Guilt to it, because he thankfully, he's never been to Birmingham, and I pray, my friend, you never have to go. Marty Morosely gave another £10. Thank you very much. Just a last one. To one, apologise to Euro, as I haven't looked into something he sent me yet and will answer tonight. Two, nativist for his latest stock pick. And three, tell Jason that he is what the French call a force tranquille. Good luck with the pronunciation, Mark. Yes, never ask me to pronounce anything in French. But thank you for the super chat. Sam Sheridan gave $10. Been following Taysom since the pre-TRS days. Good to see them grow and grow. Maybe get Ash back on for a guest episode. His intros and news headlines were amazing, like a nationalist Chris Morris skit. More of that type of media could help convert the unconverted. Take care, lads. JP gave $15. Thank you very much. Said, love the show. Keep doing God's work. Alt Fit gave £20. Thank you very much. The coronavirus is being used by our enemies to try and eliminate the nationalistic advances we have made, like Brexit and the growing opposition to mass immigration. We've discussed that at length, and yes, some of us are starting to think that too. Sensum Kamenum gave £10. Thank you very much. Will the allocation of ventilators be based on who deserves it, or is who is economically viable? Tory government should hold GDP. Tory governments hold GDP as God, and therefore the latter. So potentially natives passed over to for non-natives. Let's go around this very quickly, because obviously we're going to run short on time soon. But I can just see some old guy coming on the news saying, I gave my ventilator to this migrant. You should too. What do you guys think?
I would agree with him.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It'll be whoever's the least racist gets the ventilators first.
I mean, we're already seeing in Italy that the doctors are deciding to take the older patients off the ventilators to free them up for the younger ones. I doubt it's going to be like the patient's decision.
Correct. Yeah, that's right. I'll just quickly say that this is exactly where anti-whiteism is going to harm us again, something we can share with friends, family, and strangers, that these machines, it's only going to be moral in an anti-white atmosphere for these machines to go to non-white people. And there'll be in the media plenty of stories about the non-white woman here or the non-white guy there that didn't get the machine and now dead, and all of you white people are responsible and should feel guilty for it.
Yeah, I mean, okay. In that sort of hypothetical scenario, yeah, I think if you were the sort of person that was going to say, well, I'd rather give this to a migrant or whatever, well, yeah, you'd be doing everybody a favour. You'd certainly be doing us a favour, because we don't need dead weight. If that's your attitude to yourself on the basis of your immutable identity.
Yeah, it's like affirmative action for ventilators.
I've just had this image in front of my eyes. It's going to be Tyrone Jackson was the first of the Windrush generation, and he sadly died because some people were taking up the ventilators. And what a hero he was. He fought in the Second World War, and he's as British as you and I. They'll be rolling this propaganda out, as always, as soon as the bodies have been buried.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if somewhere out of all of this they present the heroes of the coronavirus, and they're all, hardworking doctors and nurses who wouldn't stand down, and they're all from immigrant communities, and the narrative is we were saved by these people. You can see it now. But here's a really interesting super chat. Junta Mominari gave $3. Thank you very much. And he said, Iran is the hardest hit of the coronavirus infected countries. The US added more sanctions to stop medical supplies from coming in. That's a very interesting allegation. Does anyone have any very quick takes on that?
Well, it wouldn't be the first time. I mean, someone in the US administration, I think Madeleine Albright, her sanctions on the Saddam regime resulted in the deaths of, I think, 500,000 Iraqis, and she was from a rival tribe. So we're accustomed to this kind of vicious behavior by the United States because it's controlled by vicious people that hate us.
Yeah, they definitely eat well on a Friday night in the Albright household. That's all I'll say.
Right, white is the new green. Gave £5. Thank you very much. He said, I've been elected twice in the past. I'm interested in standing for PA in 2021 county council elections. Please contact me. I've emailed you. Have you emailed me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com? Because I answer all my emails. I hope you're typing it out correctly, because I do go through my emails and I have been checking them and I haven't seen that one. It might be in my spam folder or I might have deleted it by accident. I don't know. Please email me again after the show. Also, that brings something to mind. I try to get a lot of things right for people, but even I get some things wrong occasionally. A very nice woman emailed me some time back and asked if I'd help proofread her book. Now, unfortunately, and I have to admit, I fell a little short and I only managed to proofread 2/3 of it. I'm not a great proofreader. Is anyone who watches this show a good proofreader? And if so, would they be willing to help this lady with her book? It's a very interesting book about failings in the public sector, but I'm just not a great proofreader and I'm very busy. I did my best with the 2/3 I read. She wrote to me today and I feel really guilty because I've just been so busy that unfortunately I haven't given it the attention I'd like to. But if anyone is a good proofreader that could help with that, please email me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com. And with her permission, I can put you guys in touch and hopefully you guys can work something out. That would be great. So, and again, my apologies to that lady. I hope she can be understanding and that I do have a great workload. And I often, some days I get dozens, some days close to 100 emails in a day. It's very difficult to answer all of those, especially at busy conference time. So my apologies to this lady, but hopefully we can help her out. So mark@thefallofwesternman.com, email me if you can help. The Thin Red Line gave $10 and he said, great show, guys. Thank you very much. Timmy Bobinson, I love that name, gave £5. Thank you very much. He said, wink, wink, 2 tickets to the next PA conference, please. Indeed. Wayne Scully gave $10 and said, Mark, another question for the panel. How important is it to have a psychological defense against anti-Westernism? Say like Jason's Go Free. It appears critical to me. What are your thoughts? Well, yeah, we have to be absolutely mentally aware of what's going on. And I think there are deeper levels. I mean, just to touch on something we said earlier about the girl and the toilet challenge, one of the things I've learned to do, which a lot of people fall into the trap of, is hating our own people because they've been led astray. We have to constantly keep analyzing the situation around us, and we have to constantly make sure that we're doing the right thing by our people and that we aren't a movement of rejection, but a movement of acceptance who is trying to help, as Jason would say, our people go free from this mental poison. What does everyone think about this? How important is it to have a psychological defense against the anti-white narrative?
Yeah, absolutely. Whether you're on the pagan side of things or Christian side of things, use whatever spiritual strength you can draw on to make the most for the good of your people. I mean, I like looking back on past regimes that were pro-white and looking at all the footage of how happy the people were. And that gives me a lot of strength. But yeah, do whatever you draw on whatever you can to fight for your people.
Yeah, the reason people like ourselves are vulnerable to being doxxed if our identities aren't already public is that's the next thing they do once you reach the stage where you've basically healed yourself, if you like, from the mass psychological abuse that has been inflicted upon our people for a couple of generations at least. I mean, certainly since the end of the Second World War. There are other aspects of it that go back further than that, but particularly, you know, the guilt, the sort of the cult of white guilt, and the you know, Jason used a very apt word in his speech on Saturday, you know, in his final words of that speech was the word victimizer. And that's absolutely it, because, you know, we're under an occupation, and the people that occupy, particularly the means of mass communication, have gone about instilling this a sort of a false consciousness in us, which is based entirely upon guilt and entirely upon the idea that we should basically self-abolish, and that, you know, to think in our own interests and to be basically selfish is, our very existence, you know, is original sin itself, you know, but the cardinal sin for us is to not atone for that, you know, in like unequivocally and actually to sort of dare to even think in our own interests. And that's why it takes a lot of people a long time to get it, because you feel like you're a bad person for thinking in your own interest. And that's one of the things that was so, I mean, the word I would use about Laura's speech on Saturday, it was so invigorating about it. It was so unapologetic. It was actually ruthless. It was ruthless. And actually, we need to be ruthless, you know, in the best possible way. It was selfish in thinking purely in terms, in a very reasonable way, by the way, of what's in the interest of the British people. And that obviously can be applied to any other white people. You know, this is Jason was saying earlier, you know, we're a people with many nations. This is a, it's a global struggle for us. But no, absolutely. All of this comes down to psychological manipulation. So actually, get, when you get out of it, you're suddenly very dangerous.
I think what happens with a lot of people that struggle to come around to our ideas, they would be receptive to those ideas if not for their social networks. And when I say social networks, I'm not talking about Facebook and Twitter and things like that. I mean, they're real life social networks. A lot of their time, the times the, their friends hold them back. And unless you can bring like a whole group of people along together, you'll find it very hard to bring someone like that along. So those sort of like meme pathogens, as No White Guilt likes to say, those ideas that have been instilled in us from very young age are very harmful. And, you know, they're very good at doing exactly what they're designed to do, which is to disenfranchise us.
Yeah, social stigma and social shame are massive in that. That's what I forgot to say, you know, that the idea that you'll be ill-perceived, you know, that it's the association with white self-interest with being low status and sort of ignorant and a bit sort of déclassé, is that's also a massively potent thing, particularly for middle-class people. You know, you've talked about that as well before, Mark. You talked about that a little bit when you were on TASOB in September about, you know, people in UKIP are afraid of not getting invited to, like, you know, the dinner party and what have you. And you've got to get over it. You know, this is serious. You know, you've got to just, you know, throw yourself into the struggle and just start. Yeah, I mean, I say it again, being unapologetic.
Okay, we will move on. We've got a super chat here from Southern Dingo, $10. Thank you, my friend. I love this guy. Hey, Mark, I'm very white-pilled to see the progress you guys are making in the UK. You're a great example for our people everywhere, great guests as well. I listen to your show every week and find them to be honourable men. You're a tad less honourable, but still a good fella. Lol. Keep up the great work, guys. I agree with you.
Let me just interject there, Mark. So Southern Dingo is a really great guy, and he's only trying to wind me up a bit because I never announced on TASOB after I went on his show one time, which is called like Southern AF. So if you haven't watched that, guys, go and listen to that one too. I do my very good impression of like a South London black in that one, which is the best accent I have. So yeah, worth a listen.
Southern Dingo messaged me the other day and he brought you up, Mark. He was like, "Oh, Mark Collett, I worship the ground he walks on, man."
Well, thank you very much. I really like Southern Dingo. I love appearing on his show. He's a great guy. And if he ever comes to the UK, I will buy him a pint. Linda Bailey gave $10 and says, "Let's see your best Ash Sarkar impressions." I can say this. I can't do an Ash Sarkar impression, but I have to point out that she has the most misleading Twitter profile picture you have ever seen. Her Twitter profile picture makes her look slender, tall, quite statuesque. And when you actually see her on one of these chat shows, she's like a tiny, hairy-faced little hobgoblin. So I can't do an impression, but that is my opinion of her. Do you guys do good Ash Sarkar impressions?
I've walked past her at a protest a couple of times, and I can attest to that she is 4'10", just looks like a complete hobbit. I guess my impression would be something like, "I'm a communist, you idiot."
I'm not even going to try to do an impression of her, so.
She is quite unsufferable, though, isn't she? I shouldn't be wasting time with this little bit of commentary, but I've got to say this. It's amazing, isn't it? You know, we arrange this incredible like meeting. We have all these really interesting talking points, and we are completely deplatformed by the BBC. They don't want any of these really radical talking points out there. But people like Ash Sarkar, who are really have nothing to say, are constantly invited on the BBC, constantly platformed by the mainstream media and paid hundreds of thousands of pounds a year for the privilege of being platformed by them. And she thinks she's this edgy rebel, doesn't she? She thinks she's literally the rebel in society who's going to bring down the system. She is a key tool in the system who, in fact, it is pride of place on these BBC, on the state broadcasters' flagship shows. It's amazing how deluded people like Ash Sarkar actually are. But we do have a couple more super chats. Barclay Walsh, $5. Thank you very much, mate. He says, never hate your own people for being led astray. Remember that our next generation will be significantly cooked. Our males will be docile and beaten to a pulp. But when we teach them who did this to them, their urge for revenge will be infernal. 14. That has got to go down as one of the best super chats we've received. That is very moving, especially from a guy as young as Barclay. So thank you very much for that. And Novi Honza gave $5 and said, it's understandable about young whites doing ugly things for money. The anti-whites pay top dollar for fresh souls of white youths. Parents allow children to be raised by toilet vision. Agreed. And that is why we have taken the television out of the living room, and the living room is now strewn with Sophia's toys and what we call her magic box, which is a selection of funny shapes, comfy objects, and things that she likes investigating and attempting to eat. We are not placing her in front of the television, and she is not having any electronic screens until she is much older. Although, full disclosure, this morning, she just started to roll, and this morning she did manage to turn herself around and do several barrel rolls in order to get to my phone when I wasn't looking at the other side of the bed, which she then proceeded to eat. But I am not classing that as screen time. Well, that is the end of the super chats. Thank you very much for anyone who donated. The link's in the chat if anyone would like to donate anything more before the end of the show. But we do have some questions. Albion Forever asks, how does everyone think society will be transformed by the coronavirus? I'm not really sure if there's anything more to be said about this. We've said a lot about it. I've already said, worst case scenario, we will see this massively speed the great replacement, push down house prices, which will be another reason they'll want loads more migrants to fill all these empty houses that used to belong to the pensioners.
As I said before, regardless of which way it goes, whether it's really bad for us or really good for us, and it will be in, you know, various different ways, it's gonna get people into that idea of thinking about us and them and our community and our people, because the people who are, you know, going to be able to get through something like this if it gets really bad are those who have family around them, who have a group around them, who are all able to work together. So it's gonna put that idea in people's minds. It's just gonna help to polarize. So there'll be more people for us, you know, on our side, and there'll be more people on that side, and it'd be clearer to people who's where.
I think in the short term we see totalitarian laws brought in, and martial law in the very short term. But the secondary effect is the economic collapse that's going to result. And then we will see further infractions on the white middle class, things like negative interest rates and further restrictions on people's assets. And then, the same system rolled out. Earlier in the show, the guys were warning about cash being taken away. I think that's a significant one for the banking elites. If they can get cash out of the system, then it gives them even more power to control society. We already see people on our side of things being taken away from payment processes, mm-hmm. and their lives made as difficult as possible. If you get rid of cash, you give ultimate power to the banks. And it's not only tribal interests, but also financial interests that want to destroy white people. So we have to be critical of this capitalist system, and it's going to be a very ripe time for that sort of criticism, thanks to this crisis.
Again, I would just say if things like, you know, restrictions on movement and going out really are going to be as comprehensive and as long lasting as they're being talked about, inevitably there's going to be a certain before and after, particularly in economic terms, as Native said. What's going to be interesting in that time is how the media respond. You know, once we're in the stage where maybe within a couple of weeks, there's going to be a certain degree of normality to the restrictions that are placed upon us. And, you know, people working from home, people not working. What are they actually going to do? Because we know how important and how insidious the media are in shaping people's perception of reality and in what's going on in their country. So what are they going to do? I mean, I think even the trivial things like the BBC have stopped filming EastEnders. Now, it's probably going to be great for companies like Netflix, people that aren't already subscribed, you know, signing up for that, because what they're going to do with their time, you know, assuming they're not fighting off the illness and what have you. But, you know, we talk a little bit sometimes in our circles about, you know, black swan events, and about the opportunity they may present because of all the power arrayed against us and, you know, points of weakness and points of flux. This could prove to be one of them, but there are also ways it could, you know, go against us. But we've got to be ready to respond quickly, particularly in, you know, propaganda terms and in terms of explaining to people why a lot of the, you know, the problems we're seeing are occurring. You know, again, the demography of if we do see social unrest, the demography, you know, the demographics rather of the people involved are going to be interesting. You think back to the 2011 unrest in Britain. You know, that wasn't very well documented by the media. That sort of thing is where we would need to come in, as well as pointing out the failings of the government and their tardiness in responding to this appropriately.
Okay, no one adding anything further to that. We've got another super chat. John McDermott gave £5. Thank you very much. And he said, Blood and Soil 14. We've got a super chat from Joe, and he says, a question from Joe. He says, how do you guys feel about Zimbabwe letting white Rhodesians back in as of a couple of days ago? Will it last, or should we expect it to fail? My opinion on this is it's nice they've acknowledged that they failed, but after what they did to white Rhodesians, anyone going back there has to be a little bit crazy, because I can only see history repeating itself. I can't see the Rhodesians or the indigenous people learning from their previous errors. What do you guys think?
I think Africa would be a lot better off ultimately under white rule. And I think European people do need to have interest controlling the resource of Africa for our own needs. And we can make use of it much better than they ever would. So I'm not one of these people that says, oh, just let China take over Africa. It's nothing to do with us. I do want to see us have dominion over that continent. But yeah, as you say, it's a great danger to the white people that do live in Africa because of how the locals react to them.
Fundamentally disagree with that. I believe all peoples of the world have the right to self-determination, and I would genuinely like to see Africa in the hands of Africans just as much as I would like to see Europe in the hands of Europeans.
The problem with that sort of question is, I mean, to what degree are these things cyclical? They've realized they've made a massive mistake. You know, they're saying, okay, we'll let some of these whites back in. And then after a while, they're just going to get to the same sort of place they were before and do it again. I don't think they're ever really going to learn their lesson.
Yeah, I would echo that. You know, this turning out differently would really depend, you know, it depends entirely upon the capacity of the people there to learn. You know, I was going to say the native population, but the reality is in a lot of Southern Africa, you know, the black population are no more native than the earliest Europeans that went there, you know, the Voortrekkers and people like that, depending on where you go. But, you know, the prospect of this turning out any differently, that it relies entirely upon the capacity of the black Africans to actually learn from history. All I'll say, you know, rhetorically, is how much faith have you got in that?
Well, my point on that, I don't want to, like, you know, get into a massive disagreement with a guest or anything. But my point with this is, when we went to Africa, we brought with us everything that we had created, and we brought with us all these technological marvels. We brought with us agriculture. We brought with us irrigation, medical care, civilization itself came with us. But the people we brought it to weren't ready for it. And what has it done for them? Well, it's not been great for them, and it certainly hasn't been great for us. And I just feel that at this point, peaceful separation is better. Let these people make their own way, go at their own steam. And if they do nothing with their land, well, it's their land. Let them do nothing with it. I always find that when we get into these positions, it always ends up backfiring on us one way or another. We either A, end up slaughtered in our own beds, or B, we end up with this burden of feeling that we have to look after a group of people who then become our endless dependents and not grateful dependents either. What do you think, Jason?
Well, I would say that when it comes to Zimbabwe, this is an admission of the anti-whiteism is strewn with fallacies about human nature, humankind, how the dynamism of human interaction. And this is the kind of thing that we can talk about, because really where it matters for our lives is going free ourselves and helping those around us to go free. So there's certainly going to be people in our lives, we probably all know one, that will talk about places like South Africa, places like Zimbabwe, and they will talk about how XYZ needs to be done because of the evil white race or what have you. And we can talk about how everything we predict comes to fruition, and that everything they say will come to fruition never does. Where was the nirvana that is supposed to become of South Africa? Where is the nirvana that was supposed to become of Zimbabwe? Do not let these anti-white bastards pin you and say, well, you prove your point. No, you prove your point. The onus is on you to tell me and to provide me with the evidence that everything that we see in reality, everything that we see in examination, everything that is demonstrable, everything that is testable is the exact opposite of what we see in these examinations. The onus is on you. And in fact, we see with the Zimbabwe begging, please come grow our food again. That is another example of the fallacies that are strewn throughout the entirety of anti-whiteism. And the final thing I'll say as we are running out of time here is that talk about this with your friends, family, and strangers. Ladies and gentlemen, if we had homogenous societies, we would be able to endure things like plagues, things like hurricanes, with a lot more facility, with a lot more ease, with a lot more lives saved, with a lot, everything would be better. We can, nothing's going to be perfect, but everything would be better. You can simply point to the United States during these horrible hurricanes where the all white areas or the nearly all white areas are law abiding. Homes are not getting robbed. People are helping each other out. They're going around on the little rubber rafts. And then you see where the areas are multiracial, non-white, et cetera, where they're fully diversified, which means there aren't any white people left. You see what? You see people standing on top of rooftops and gunning down folks and then robbing them right in the middle of the streets. So that is the kind of thing you see in a multiracial society, because there is no feeling of kin. And as things get worse, if they do get worse, we're going to be seeing that as a consequence of this plague. I pass it back.
Well, thank you. And one last thing I'll add to this. My way of thinking about this is every society that has built or tried to build a two-tier society where there is a clear racial underclass has ended in disaster. And it's actually ended in disaster for those who tried to be the first class citizens and tried to do something good for that underclass. And I just don't think the world over, regardless of the kindness and inventiveness and all the good things we've shown to these people, they've actually become our burden. And for everything we've done for them, in many cases, they actually hate us. So that is just my take on that. But it does bring us, conveniently, to the end of the show. A lot of people have asked about questions about patriotic alternative and the future for it, etc. Me and Laura will be doing a special stream on that in due course. At the moment, things are somewhat up in the air because we were going to hold a series of regional meetings, which obviously can't be held now due to the coronavirus issue. Now, one thing before we do the wrapping up, I know this is going to make us run a little late, but we do have entropy polls, and we do polls throughout the show. And one of the shows I've done here is, do you know anyone who's had the coronavirus? Now, seven people have said no, and one person said yes. Now, that isn't obviously a statistically meaningful number of people to be surveyed. But let's just go around this group. I don't know anyone with coronavirus or who's had coronavirus. Does anyone here actually know anyone who's got it or had it?
There's one lad in one of our group chats who I strongly suspect has it, because his dad got back from Singapore three weeks ago.
Actually had it. Not somebody you strongly suspect, but does anyone actually know in the real world anyone who's had it?
No one has tested positive, because I've been giving all my friends and family good advice.
Yeah, well, look, I'm immune to it because I've been living off four cans of Red Bull per hour. And the only physical sustenance I've had is Lemsip Max Strength capsules. So if you live off a diet of those two things, apparently you become immune to all disease and almost ascend to a new level, I've heard. That is a joke, by the way. Before everyone in the chat explodes that I've ruined the show by admitting to my Red Bull addiction. No, that was a joke. But I will say this. When you look at the recent successes and failures in nationalism, we have proved one thing. Red Bull does a lot more for people than cans of Carling or marching powder. Anyway, on that bombshell, let's wrap things up. I'd just like to say, firstly, thank you to the absolute state of Britain. If you guys can give yourselves all a little outro before we wrap up, that would be fantastic.
Yeah, yes, so tune in to us at therightstuff.biz or on Spreaker, and we are the absolute state of Britain.
Yeah, it's been a great week following on for the conference. It's great to meet you there, Jason. And absolute credit to you, Mark, for sparking this UK real nationalism movement. It's great to have been involved. And I urge everyone else to do the same, because this is the start of something special.
Yeah, echo that. Honour to be on Patriotic Weekly Review. These are incredibly exciting times. The growth in participation and the level of activity and the building of community and coordination, both due to PA and elsewhere over the past 12 months or so, has just been absolutely phenomenal. You know, Jason said something in his speech on Saturday about how, basically our enemies would be right to be afraid. You know, they certainly should, because obviously this transcends national borders. But, you know, particularly within the UK, you know, the rate at which things are, the rate at which the cause is growing and the rate at which we're evolving is a very exciting thing.
Just one more thing to add before you take back over, Mark. The reason you should listen to TASOB, we've had at least three speakers from former Patriotic Alternative events on the show, including yourself, and we're going to have another one on very soon.
Okay, thank you very much. Now, Jason, please let us know where we can find you and tell us who's on tap.
Well, we don't know quite yet who's on tap, but we're going to tap into somebody and we'll let everybody know. It's, of course, going to be over on No White Guilt and Gardening with NWG on YouTube. It was a big honor to meet these gentlemen and to appear with them on the show today, the absolute state of Britain. I look forward to listening more to your programs. Honorable men here, ladies and gentlemen, bright as well. They know exactly what's going on in the world. And this is the kind of leadership we need. This is the kind of thought influence we need moving forward as the world becomes increasingly wild, crazy, and dangerous for our people. They're going to be looking for answers. And it is an honor to serve with folks like this, and a deep honor to serve with the great Mark Collett here on the PWR, and to be able to have visited for the Patriotic Alternative Conference. So I pass it back to you, my dear friend.
Thank you very much, and thank you for joining us at the weekend. It was an honor to meet you in person. I just want to say something finally about the TASOB, lads. It really is so nice to meet people like these guys. They are all so decent, all so down to earth. They're fun to be around. From the moment I met them all, I felt as if I'd known them for years. And it's also, for me, very touching and a genuine honor to meet people like them who've seen me maybe on a TV show 20 years ago, and to know that I've in some small way shaped their political development. It is truly humbling, and even more humbling when these people who I have helped to shape in some small way go on to produce such amazing, moving, entertaining, and humorous work. These guys are exactly what this movement needs. And it is an absolute privilege to call them friends as well. And I'm looking forward to seeing them at a lot more events. They are absolute stand-up lads. So thank you so much for being on here, guys. And I really wish you all the best for the future. And I hope to be a guest again on TASOB soon. Now, I would also like to thank everyone who has donated to the show. If you've donated to the show, thank you very much. Your generosity is very touching. We just had one last super chat from Lawrence Scott, £10. Thank you very much. He said, God, it took an hour for my phone to send you a tenner. Thank you very much. If you want to donate, you can now donate via Entropy when we are offline. And you can also donate via Bitcoin. That can be done at any time. And the link of that is in the description. So that just leaves me to say, I will be back on Friday for my regular upload, which will be my conference speech. We will be back next week. And in the coming weeks, we have a great lineup of guests. We have Edward Dutton, we have Millennial Woes, and we have Daughter of Albion. It's going to be a big few weeks, folks. So thank you for joining us. I hope you all have a wonderful, wonderful rest of your evening. And please stay safe. These are uncertain times. Please look after yourselves. Please look after each other. Genuinely, thank you to everyone who attended the conference, everyone here in the chat. I love you all. This is an amazing, positive community, and I will see you all same time next week. Have a great evening.